Welcome back to Arts About.
This is a show about art, Sally, and it's a work of art in itself.
Yes, indeed it is. And welcome to another Sunday morning with Artist in Residence and Cultural Sounding Board, John Baird, and the fabulous and always fascinating Mark Stewart and me, Sally Bailey. Arts About is brought to you by the generosity of the McClellan Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. How is everyone this week?
I'm good. G'day, Mark.
G'day, John. I'm very well also. How could we not be with such a wonderful
weather? I know. We've had such a glorious week as well. What are you on about this week, John?
I'm going to talk about Hal Hatton and his exhibition at Eastgate Galleries in Hawthorne and the peculiar circumstances of my own birth.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, you alluded to it last week, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing that exhibition too, I must admit. Mark?
I'm going to finish my talk about Rodin and his Balzac sculpture, which is in the National Gallery, the NGV, and I'll be moving on to Marcel Duchamp.
That sounds very good. Okay, sounds very arty this week.
Yes.
Now, topless chess.
Topless chess. What? That's a great photo, that one, isn't it? What a pair of breasts.
Oh, so, okay.
Marcel Duchamp famously played chess with a topless girl.
Who was famous?
What was her name? There's a famous photo showing him playing chess. He's not looking at her, but it's a lovely photo.
I better see if I can find that one. Now, it's all about musical theatre this week. We're going to talk to a couple of theatre makers from different sides of the industry about the shows they've got coming up for us in the new year. Darren Yap is directing the second version of Miracle City at the Athenaeum after a wonderfully successful season at the Sydney Opera House. And the show features ARIA Award-winning Missy Higgins in one of its roles. It's coming to Melbourne in February, and we're going to find out about that. And we're also going to be talking to Robbie Carmelotti, and he's one of two executive producers from a company called Stage Art. They're a theatre company who present out of Chapel on Chapel in Paran. They're a smaller, less mainstream company whose mission statement is to create diversity upon the Australian musical landscape. So we're going to be finding out about his very interesting company and the shows that they've got announced for next year's season. It's been an amazing week. A record-breaking $450 million has been paid at Christie's for Leonardo's Salvator Mundi, commissioned by King Louis XII of France.
Yeah, Leonardo Schmielardo.
Right. Yes, yeah, a very questionable deal, that one.
Right.
Because, you know, the painting was bought for $10,000 by a consortium of art experts.
Yep.
It was then restored.
And I saw the original photograph. It looked ridiculous.
Terrible. I mean, a lot of those paintings were overpainted, but that one it took them 5 years to restore it, and I guess about 5 years to get all the people to agree that it was in fact a Leonardo and worth that much money. So we'll see.
Well, I don't know about worth that much money. It's just, you know, it's a swing tag again.
There's an interesting...
The only reason anyone's talking about that picture is because of the swing tag.
Oh, no, also because Leonardo apparently the only Leonardo. But it is very questionable.
Yeah, and the very fascinating and hilarious Dr. Gabe is back from a trip to the Arab countries, and she went along to the opening of the Abu Dhabi Louvre. Mm. And whilst I haven't heard stories from her yet, I think we might be able to get her in over the next couple of weeks to talk about that, so that should be pretty exciting.
Good.
Now, it's also been a fabulous, fabulous week because love triumphed in Australia and marriage equality comes close to becoming a reality. We're hoping, of course, that the political animals do the right thing and listen to the 61.6% of voters who said yes.
Fortunately, Tony's not in there anymore. Do you know who are rubbing their hands in glee, though?
Who?
The lawyers.
Oh, are they?
Because gay divorces are really big.
Do you know I was thinking about that? Of course, that is a very big new business that will be coming up, absolutely. Not to be miserable about things before it's even begun. So to celebrate the new spirit of open-mindedness, I've got a band here, an all-girl band from Reykjavik. They're called Electra, and this is a song that they've got called I Don't Do Boys. The musical Miracle City comes to Melbourne this February after a much acclaimed season at the Sydney Opera House earlier this year. Originally premiering at the Sydney Theatre Company in 1996, it was restaged at the Hayes Theatre Company in 2014, getting 5 Sydney Theatre Award nominations and rave reviews. A brand new production directed by our next guest, Darren Yap, has just completed a highly acclaimed season at Sydney Opera House and takes over the Athenaeum on February the 9th. Written by the late, great Australian dramatist Nick Enright, who also wrote Boys from Oz, Lorenzo's Oil and Cloud Street, Miracle City is based on a concept by Max Lambert, who wrote the music, and who is also the musical director in this production. It's set in the 1980s at the height of TV evangelism and takes aim at the infamous religious TV duo Tammy and Jimmy Baker, telling the story of the Truswell family, who have a dream to build a religious theme park, but also a problem with money. To tell us more, the director of the show, Darren Yap, a huge star himself, who has directed and performed in such a long list of big musical productions in Australia, Singapore and London's West End, it would take far too long to list them. Good morning, Darren Yap, and welcome to Arts About.
Thank you, Sally. What an introduction. My head's really big.
Goodness, is it?
Especially on a Monday. It's lovely to hear about Miracle City and my career.
Well, I'm sorry. I could have gone on. It's such a long list. But we better talk about the production Miracle City. I've heard that it's been described as the great lost Australian musical. Can you tell us a little bit why that might be?
Yeah, Sally, I first saw Miracle City directed by Gail Edwards in 1996. Which is obviously over 20 years ago at the Sydney Theatre Company. And it only ran, because it was a new Australian work at that time, it only ran for about 3-4 weeks at the most. And Sydneysiders couldn't get a ticket. Like, it was just people queuing. People like Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman came. There were, like, big celebrities who heard about this show called Miracle City, written by Nick Enright and Max Lambert. So it had this real buzz 20 years ago in Sydney. And then it literally, Sally, evaporated. It was because of programming with major theatre companies like that. It couldn't come back. And people just kept talking about this show called Miracle City. Oh, my goodness, I missed it. I should have heard, you know. And it just had and has always had that part.
Well, amazing. Well, you've already directed this show in 2014, so you obviously brought it back then. Is this a different show?
It is. As all work, it's interesting because I've just done a play called Diving for Pearls, which is 20 years old, and it's evolved itself too in over time because I think that's what theatre is about. So I did the 2014 version, as you said, Sally, and literally because so many things have changed and are still the same about Miracle City. Strangely and sadly, what Nick and Max were talking about was the whole idea of corruption possibly and a kind of the question of faith. Mm-hmm. Faith in yourself, faith in God, faith in the person you love, and also, unfortunately, sometimes about the hypocrisy and the things that happen in the church. And those things, Sally, haven't changed. So they, in 2014, even became more magnified as far as what was happening in the church, what was happening with certain situations. If we talk about now in 2017, the Harvey Weinstein thing,
yeah,
that is a theme and an issue that is so relevant, Sally, in Miracle City that Nick wrote over 20 years ago, and yet its themes about what's been coming out in the papers about harassment is actually part of one of the stronger themes right now in Miracle City. So it has actually updated itself strangely because the issues in the play have become very relevant.
Well, Nick Enright and Max Lambert, both of them are sort of luminaries of the genre, really. They're both very big names in Australian musicals. Nick writing The Boy from Oz and Max Lambert has worked virtually in every theatre company and with every musical performer you could name, including, of course, writing the music for Miracle City. And you've had a long collaboration with them both. What's it like having Max as the musical director for this production?
Well, Max being my partner and also in my life, very clear about his concept of what the piece is. It is, to be honest with you, Sally, it can be a blessing and a curse.
I can imagine,
because
actually.
Because on one level, I know exactly what he wants, and he came up with the concept. And Nick was a very dear friend to both Max and I. So I feel very honoured as a human being, let alone the director, that I have inside knowledge about the piece and the DNA. What I do genuinely think, having Max as the composer, the person who conceived Miracle City and the MD, is even 20 years plus later, it can't alter too much because it's so important to Max's, I guess, in his DNA of what he wants to talk about as far as music, where music is from, who is God, is there a God, putting your faith in a community, all those questions that Nick and Max were asking 20 years ago. I think Max is very honest with me to make sure, as the director, those issues are still being raised in the production.
Can you tell us a little bit about the story of Miracle City? Because it takes aim at a pretty hilarious chapter of 70s American, you know, culture, doesn't it?
Yeah. Mm. I don't know if everyone remembers, particularly in the 70s and the 80s, but Jimmy and Tammy Baker, they were TV
Who
bands.
Who could forget them?
Oh, my God. Well, pardon the pun, oh, my God.
Hairdos and eyelashes. Yeah.
Extraordinary celebrity TV evangelical preachers, and they were. Jimmy was raising money for a theme park, and the theme park was built, Sally, but unfortunately there was discoveries of embezzlement, and Jimmy went to prison, and the theme park closed down. And I guess part of what Nick and Max were attracted to was this bizarre story of show business and the bizarre kind of corruption of people coming, pledging their money, trusting in Jimmy and Tammy to put their money into a Christian theme park where people can pray and play. And that was the genesis of the story. And a beautiful friend of ours, and indeed a wonderful actress, Genevieve Lemon, is still in our lives. But Nick and Max really wanted to write a piece with Genevieve Lemon at that time. So she was an inspiration for the character of Laura Lee. And she kind of based a little bit on Tammy Faye Baker. She is the centre of the story, Sally. And it is the story of a character called Laura Lee Truswell and her husband, Ricky Truswell. They have a Sunday morning TV show every Sunday all through America. They have two beautiful children, and the story picks up on this Sunday morning when the show goes square. And in 90 minutes, or actually less than 90 minutes, without giving the story away, There are issues that Ricky Truswell and her husband have to deal with financing this theme park they're trying to build. And he is in trouble and in debt and needing help to raise money to finish the theme park. So it's the central kind of wonderful storytelling is what happens to this Ricky and Laura Lee Truswell, and what do they do with that TV show going on, trying to fix and raise the money so they won't go bankrupt.
Very fertile ground. Missy Higgins is playing one of the Citadel singers in this production, and most of us will all know who Missy Higgins is, the woman. She has the most remarkable voice. It's very exciting to see her on the theatre stage. I know she's been on film before, but I think this is her theatrical debut, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Sally. We are so privileged to have someone of Missy's calibre. And no surprise probably to people who are fans of Missy. When she first walked in, I mean, she always wanted to do a musical. She grew up 7 or 8 years old watching Starlight Express, and she's always loved musicals, and as our lives do, she ended up going down another road and writing songs. But that's been a real burning passion for her, and the short version of the story is that when we were thinking of who could play the role of Bonnie Mae, it was kind of joking, but actually because through friends of friends of 2 Degrees of Separation, Missy's name came up. And then we got in contact with Missy's agent, and Missy went, absolutely. And I have to be honest, Ali, like, she auditioned for the role. She wanted to be, she wanted to get the job officially and properly. So she did the song, I'll Hold On, and then she did some acting scenes, and we just fell in love with her. Mm. And she has bowled audiences over as Bonnie Mae in the Opera House season. And when she sings I'll Hold On, the response, the applause is extraordinary.
Well, fabulous. I have got a version of that song, not sung by Missy, but from the 2014 staging of the show with Esther Hannaford, which I'm going to play after this as well.
Esther's brilliant. And Esther did, she brought the house down too, Sally. Like, Esther Hannaford is now Carole King and Beautiful. She is such a beautiful, beautiful soul. And her recording of it is stunning.
Well, I know that Missy too is not the only performer in there, but we are running out of time. I'd love to go through all of the performers. I'm sure you've got an incredible cast. Can you list a couple for us?
Sure. We have as Ricky Truswell, the lead, and his wife. We have Gus Murray. Gus, I saw star in Mousetrap, and he's been in The Great Gatsby, and he's been a reverend or a father in McLeod's Daughters. We have he's a really lovely, charismatic guy. We have Kelly Rhode, who I did Mamma Mia with. And she's played Janet in Rocky Horror Show. She's the wife. And then their children are Jessica Vickers, who's a wonderful NIDA graduate and been in On the Roof. And we have Ricky Bob Truswell, and he's played by two boys, Louie and Finn, and they're about 12, 13-year-olds, and they're really fabulous new stars of the future. And then, of course, we have Missy and Missy Higgins, and also Lara Mulcahy, who, as you know, was Madame Thénardier in Les Mis, and also Rosie in Mamma Mia. And she's been touring with Rhonda Birchmore in ABBA, the ABBA show.
Yep.
And we have Josie Lane, who did the 2014 version. She did Rocky Horror Show, and she's done Jesus Christ Superstar. A guy called Liam Noonan, who plays Billy. He's in love with Loretta, and he has just starred in Away for the SBC.
Lots of big stuff.
Anthony Phelan, Sally, who is one of my biggest heroes, who's in the Kittering incident and everything else, and he plays the elder preacher.
It sounds like it's going to be an extraordinary show. If Sydney's anything to go by, I think that perhaps our listeners probably should start looking out and buying some tickets. I will make links on our Facebook page. Miracle City begins at the Athenaeum Theatre on Thursday, the 9th of November. And thank you so very much for talking to us today about it, Director Darren Yap.
Thank you so much, Sally. Lovely to talk.
We're going to go out now with that wonderful song by Esther Hannaford. I'll hold on.
Okay.
Our next guest, Robbie Carmelotti, is one of the executive producers of Stage Art. Along with Catherine Armstrong, Stage Art presents an eclectic mix of less and well-known musical shows on the stages of Chapel on Chapel and strives to present diversity in musical theatre. Fighting the tide of mainstream choices that often choose box office ratings over suitability for roles and subjects that offend the less number of audience members, Stage Art seeks out the brave and sometimes controversial shows and the right actor for the role, providing a broader palette of talent than we might be used to seeing in larger mainstream shows. Working within a smaller footprint at Chapel on Chapel enables braver choices, and we, the audience, are the beneficiaries. Musical theatre is becoming very interesting in their hands. After a successful 2017 with The Full Monty, Spring Awakening and Memphis the Musical, Stage Art are announcing their 2018 season. All three shows explore modern issues through the lens of music and theatre, and to tell us what some of those issues might be and what productions they'll be exploring, as well as hear a little bit more about this interesting company, we welcome Robbie Carmelotti to Arts About. Thank you for joining us this morning, Robbie.
My pleasure, Sally. Thank you for having me.
Robbie, on your website, you describe Stage Art as challenging preconceived notions and conceptions by creating diversity on the Australian musical theatre landscape. Now, you started Stage Art 6 years ago, and you're running a very interesting model, which is a bit counter to the climate where big budget and appealing to the masses are the usual signs of success. Your company's smaller, more diverse, and chooses more challenging shows than we might be used to seeing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, we're obviously a smaller, independent-based company, so our objective is to bring smaller and more independent-based shows to Melbourne to show our audiences. So we look at shows that are running on Broadway or running off-Broadway or even on the West End and choose shows basically that won't be brought out here by mainstream producers because they're either too risky to sell or their cast requires too much diversity. So our key objective is to sort of bring shows to Melbourne that people wouldn't otherwise get to see, and we've had great success with that. We've been able to produce Dreamgirls, the musical, The Colour Purple, the musical, In the Heights, the musical. And the great thing about it is we feel like we've actually contributed to changing the landscape of musical theatre in Melbourne and Australia, and we're broadening out amongst the community, and we are seeing these shows produced by more mainstream producers, which is fantastic.
And certainly developing a whole lot of careers out there as well, because, you know, it's this diversity aspect's very interesting, and we're becoming used to, certainly on the screens, of seeing the same actors cast in often really unsuitable roles because they happen to be A-listers and so on, and it's really often to the detriment, I think, of the productions.
Yeah, great. Look, we run an interesting process at Stage Art. We have an open door policy when it comes to casting. So every show we do, we have an open call audition where anyone and everyone's welcome to come along and have a sing and have a dance. And we don't actually look at any resumes or headshots in the lead up.
And from there, we select the people that are going to go further through the process. But it's really allowed us to explore some new talent, and we've discovered some amazing people. It's how we discovered the likes of Jamie Lee Hanekom, who's now starring in one of the lead roles in Book of Mormon. Also, that's how we discovered our lead role in our last show, The Memphis, Alandra Theo.
We spoke to Alandra actually on Arts About It in October while the show was on.
Yes, I listened to that.
Oh, did you? Oh, good. Oh, that's fantastic. Well, let's hear about the program that you've got coming up for this next year. You've got three shows that you're going to be presenting. What's the first one?
We do. We've got three fantastic shows. So the first one is called Falsettos. And this is a really lovely musical that was written almost 20 years ago now. And it's really quirky, and it's got some sadness to it as well. It's set in the early 1980s. During the AIDS pandemic in New York City, and it focuses in on a young family who there's a husband and wife, and the husband decides that he is homosexual, and so the show is based on him coming to terms with his sexuality and his wife coming to terms with it and their small child, and through this process very close people with them are affected by the AIDS pandemic. So it doesn't sound like a quirky show because it deals with such a heavy topic, but it really reminds you that, you know, family is what you want family to be. And no matter what the adversity is, if you love someone, you can actually all get through it together. It's a really beautiful show, and we're really, really proud to have the professional premiere for Victoria for this show.
And that's opening in March, isn't it?
February, that one.
So February.
For 2 weeks over the Midsummer Festival.
Mm-hmm. Appropriately.
For the 11th of February, yeah.
Yeah, very
appropriate. We are supporting the Midsummer Festival and also the Victorian AIDS Council with that production.
Wonderful. And Dean Dryburgh, who I think directed Memphis, is directing that, isn't he?
Directing our second show, which
I've got it all mixed up. I'm sorry.
The musical.
Okay.
Falsettos has got a wonderful director called Tyron Park, who's mm-hmm. currently based in Sydney, and he's flying down here to direct the show for us.
And
so
well,
our second show, Bear, which is directed by Dean Dryburgh and also choreographed by Kira Sybil, who also choreographed Memphis with Dean. So they'll be doing Bear the Musical.
And what's Bear the Musical? Because we've not heard of that.
Bear the Musical, I guess, targeted at a slightly different audience. So it's more of a teen, angsty, pop rock type of show. So it's a little in a similar vein to Spring Awakening or Rent. So it's based on a group of teenagers that are attending a Catholic boarding school in the early 2000s. And basically coming to terms with their identity and the struggles that they are trying to overcome in life, and also in alignment with the Catholic religion, which is it's a very tough Catholic school they're in. I didn't go to a Catholic school myself, but it seems like a very harsh one.
They often do sound a bit like that. And yeah. And what's the third production you've got coming up this year?
And
next year, I should say.
It's a famous musical that's actually never been done in Melbourne professionally, called Nine the Musical. So Nine is this fantastic musical written about 30 years ago, which won 5 Tony Awards. And it bases around one man named Guido and the women in his life. So you meet his wife, his lover, his other lover, his mother, his grandmother. It's set in Italy, so it's got this real European flair about it. And yeah, it had a movie made about it starring Kate Hudson and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
This was based on Frederick Fellini's autobiographical film, 8 and a Half, wasn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah. Yes, yes. So that's probably coming up. When will that be? In October?
So that's October, yeah.
Yeah,
October
next year.
12,
Now, I know you throw your hand in occasionally as director. You did Spring Awakening, I think, this year. And I also noticed that you directed Hair a few years ago. I wish I'd known about that. That's got to be one of my all-time favourites.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, it is.
Fine food.
It's fantastic. Were you also a performer?
I was. I started my career as a dancer about 25 years ago. And then just through natural progression, I sort of moved into acting and then directing. And then from there, Catherine and I decided to start producing our own shows. And that's how Stage Art became what it is.
Well, Melbourne is all the more richer for your efforts. It's really exciting to see the program that you're developing out there, and also exciting to see how it's really resonating with a growing audience. If people want to come along and see these shows, how does it work? Do you have a subscriber base? How do you draw your audience?
Yeah, we do. We have the option where people can subscribe to see all three shows, and you save quite a bit of money if you subscribe. So the best thing to do for that is to head to our website, which is stageart.com.au. You can also find us on Facebook and you can get a subscription there. But we do sell individual tickets, of course. So
people can just turn up on the night.
I'm quite sure people will see advertisement for shows out and about so they can easily book.
Wonderful. Well, I'll also put links on our Facebook page to direct our listeners to your website and these shows, notify them about the shows. So thank you so much for talking to us today. We really look forward to coming along and seeing some of those shows next year. Thank you very much. Robbie Carmelotti. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mark almost thought it was time for Mark on there.
He did. I hope he didn't say anything rude over that ad.
I hope they weren't listening.
Hal Hatton.
Hal Hatton, yes.
On at Eastgate. He's an interesting character. He was a obstetrician, but also a painter, and he...
like Joseph Brown.
Was he an obstetrician as well?
He was a doctor of some sort.
Right. No, this Hatton was specifically an obstetrician, and he... assisted at various births, but a lot of Melbourne artists had Hal Hatton assist at the wife's birth, and in exchange for a painting. And
how brilliant!
He built this massive collection of Australian art, and I started going to their house when I was in my 20s to visit with a friend of mine, Mark French, actually. And the house was a massive Victorian
pile.
Yeah, I guess so, in Cromwell Road in South Yarra. But it was an early Victorian house. It had verandas all the way around with those very slender veranda posts, iron veranda posts. Lovely house.
Mm.
It was in considerable disrepair and had a lovely Australian garden around it, lots of gum trees and stuff like that. The back room where the kitchen was, you could walk through there, and the sideboard, the 15-foot tall sideboard, would kind of lean towards you a little bit, full of Boyd pottery, you know. It's a bit alarming, but really, really quite beautiful. And you could flick your way through the paintings in the passageway, and after a while, not be surprised to see the Williams or the Brack or the various other fantastic Australian paintings. They had a massive collection of Williams paintings. In fact, the biggest ever mounted, I think.
Do you have a lot of children, Fred?
Yeah, he did have a few kids. But he's got a show on at Eastgate. Mm. He's a painter as well, and a very good painter. He painted with Fred Williams up in the Yu Yangs and those kinds of places.
He also painted a lot in Shoreham, didn't he?
Yeah, he preferred beaches, so he painted in Shoreham. He liked Fraser Island and up around there, and Lake Wobby. One can only assume that he liked the idea of being away from people. He was a Collins Street doctor. And he liked being out of that situation and elsewhere. The beaches he painted generally didn't have a footprint on them, you know. They were completely and absolutely empty. I remember seeing a beach like that at Wye River, I think it was.
Doesn't happen very often, does it?
It was a beach the size of Bondi Beach, you know, and there wasn't a footprint on it. It was just beautiful. Mm.
We saw a few of those up in the Kimberley, actually. Mm. But well, it's hard to get to.
Quiet corner in Black Rock can be like that quite often.
Really? Mm. No footprints?
No footprints. Yeah. After the tide's been up.
Oh, yeah. True.
If you get down there first. the paintings that he made of the beach, of beaches like Shoreham and Fraser Island, he made a lot of them in the 1970s, and these are the paintings that are up at Eastgate. And there's something about a painting that's been around for 50 years, oil paintings, where the paint takes on a new character. It looks like old paint.
Does it?
But the paintings themselves don't look like old paintings. So they're the kind of paintings that people are still making, I would think, you know, that sort of vaguely Williams-y, with paint splotches and lots of broad areas of beachy colour, that kind of thing.
Very different palette to Williams, but
much
similar.
Lighter and perhaps a little less aggressive, you know. Fred Williams had a kind of an aggressive approach to the Australian landscape.
They look a little bit more whimsical.
Mm. But they're quite beautiful, and yeah, I particularly liked the character of the paint and the ageing of the paint. But I just want to show you something, Mark.
Yeah.
John, do you know...
Which is good for radio. It's going to show Mark something.
Yes, oil paint, you know, takes 200 years to dry.
Yes, I have heard that. It's an incredible fact, isn't it? That, yeah. Oh, perhaps you did.
All oil
paint. That's amazing, Mark.
Some oil paint. See that?
Oh, it's gone off. He's passing an iPad over. Presumably it's a picture of...
Yes, no, this is a Hal...
It's a Hal Hatton painting.
Hal Hatton painting. That's Lake Wobby on Fraser Island. Now, this guy is a gynecologist. Does that painting look a little like I'm looking over my shoulder at my birth?
Well, I wouldn't have
that condition. Down the birth canal,
My first reaction is it looks like a Fred Williams with perspective.
Right.
But no, I don't see any really? Birth connotations there, John.
Right.
I'll put it up on the Facebook page. Actually, well, yeah, I think I already have. And I think I have, because I think I've made a note of this exhibition on the Facebook page. And in fact, this particular painting is the front page of the invitation. Yeah. So I think you can have a look at that. Yes, it does. Yes. Birth. Well, I can see where you're coming from, John.
I'm going to use that as somewhat of a segue.
What, to Mark?
No.
Oh.
To my own birth.
Yes.
In fact, Hal Hatton was my mother's obstetrician.
But sorry, John. As you weren't already painting, how did they? What was the? What did your father give to Hal for your birth?
Well, he was employed as a doctor. There was no deal.
Okay.
In fact, it was probably my birth was before all of that was going on. And it's essentially a coincidence that my mother's obstetrician became... They knew the Hattams through other people, and that was where the arrangement was made. But while Hal Hatton, the soon-to-be well-known Melbourne painter, was attending my birth, my father, who was very keen to attend my birth, was elsewhere. In fact, he was at Maralinga in the Woomera area of South Australia, helping build some equipment for the nuclear tests out there in South Australia. And the particular bits of equipment that he was responsible for had broken down, which is why he was there. And he said to them, I've got to go back to Melbourne because my wife's about to give birth. And they said, well, we can't run anything here until you've done that. And he said, oh, I can't do anything about it, I'm going. So they flew him back to Melbourne in an RAF Mosquito, so he could be at my birth, and which held up the Australian nuclear program.
Go, John! An activist from the beginning.
Was it worth it?
You tell me, mate.
Very good. What a great story. Thanks, John.
Good.
So, Mark?
Okay, well, look, I'm going to continue on with my talk about Rodin and his Balzac.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a sculpture which you know quite well.
Well, Melbourne, it's been in Melbourne's embrace for some time.
Yes, they didn't look into that, how long they've had it.
They've had it for a long time. They've had it, well, certainly since the gallery was built on St Kilda Road, which was in the late 60s, early 70s.
Right, okay. Yeah. And before I go on to Rodin, I just want to mention that there's a few shows coming up,
mm-hmm.
which at the NGV, there's the Triennale, which is beginning on December the 15th until April the 15th.
Which is mm-hmm. what?
A triennale is a three-yearly event where a couple of curators come up with a theme
mm-hmm.
and get all these poor artists together to make a show.
Right.
Okay.
Like Melbourne Now. You saw Melbourne Now?
Yeah.
There's the Adelaide Biennale coming starting next year on March 3rd. There's the Sydney Biennale. They're all at it at the same time. Opens March 2018. They were one of the first to do Biennale in 1973.
Not that it's a competition.
No, well, yeah, no.
Well, it is a competition.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of money sort of sloshing around here. That's going to be over about three or four venues. And Brisbane is doing their Asia Pacific Triennale, which is in the summer of 2018, 2019, bringing about 80 artists from 30 countries, which I did see one in Brisbane a few years ago. It was actually quite a good show because you get a lot of Asian artists who you've never heard of doing some quite interesting things.
As opposed to Melbourne Now.
Oh, look, we won't go back into Melbourne Now. So. Okay. Now, there's also Jenny Watson at Heidi.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. I'd like to see that.
Well, I would not like to see that.
Okay.
I don't understand her paintings at all.
Okay.
I find the whole sort of...
charming incompetence.
Charming incompetence, which some people like Mr. John Baird can do quite well. hopefully Jenny Watson... I don't know. Maybe I should go and see it. There's also Del Catherine Barton.
Oh,
Is that her real name?
Del Catherine... yes, I don't see why
it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Is it? Anyway, I she's obsessed with feminism, which brings up a lot of different emotions.
In you, absolutely.
Yes, which I'm not going to hide.
No, of course, very good.
And then there's the Kransky sisters, which you spoke about last week, John, and I've never heard of, and I've looked them up, and they've actually
seemed quite interesting.
And they're in Victoria. I'm going to try and see them.
Good.
Okay, now, we've only got five,
get to August. Now, August was born in 1840 and died in 1917. He was refused entry into the École des Beaux-Arts three times as a young man. During his lifetime, many of his most notable sculptures were roundly criticized as they clashed with the decorative, formulaic, and highly thematic artistic tradition of his time. Now that sounds very familiar to me.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. it's
what we're doing now.
It's almost a rule.
It's contemporary art for me. Mm-hmm. Is I'll repeat that: decorative, formulaic, and highly thematic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now this idea of a theme is something which I find really difficult in a lot of exhibitions, but that's what we're dealing with these days.
Mm-hmm.
I question that. So to make a connection, which I'm not going to get to Balzac, I'm moving on to Marcel Duchamp,
mm-hmm.
okay, because Rodin died in 1917 and Duchamp exposed his urinal titled Fountain in 1917. So you look at the difference between your bronze sculptures of Rodin, who was in fact, he was called an impressionist sculpture,
mm-hmm.
he was in fact just short-sighted.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Everything was blurry.
Everything was blurry. So that's why there's no detail. It's all form, and it was it happens often. You know, there's a lot of.
I'm sure it does.
So getting back to the Duchamp, he did the exhibition at the Salon of the Society of Independent Artists in New York, of which he was one of the founding members
mm-hmm.
with Walter Arensky and a few others. He was their opening exhibition. He put in his urinal, and they refused to show it. They put it in, but behind a partition.
Oh.
The urinal then disappeared. Now, there was recently 200 art experts were called on to define what were the defining objects, art objects or paintings of the 20th century. And they said the first was the urinal, was one of the most important. The second was the Femme de l'Algier of Picasso, which was sold for $147 million before it was the highest sold painting. Price painting before the Leonardo. So when you think about this, this was all happening in 1917, and they were still dealing with all the epigenes of contemporary art. after that urinal.
So the urinal was stolen at about the same time as the Mona Lisa was stolen.
Is that what
makes them both the most famous works of art in the world, the fact that they were stolen?
No. The urinal wasn't stolen. It disappeared because nobody thought, they just thought it was a urinal.
It was probably plumbed in somewhere. Yes.
Something happened to it, but then in 1964, Marcel did with the Gallery Swartz in Milan.
So did they just get another one and he wrote on it again?
No, they did a series. They made about six, I think, and they made them out of they made them themselves, and then he painted on it. Mm. And there was a lot of the American contemporary artists at the time were up in an uproar that Marcel had sold himself out. But anyway, he needed the money.
Mm.
So we'll get to Balzac some other time.
Yeah, I think we will. Very, okay. We'll definitely get to
He'll still
at
be
some
there,
point.
So there's no problem there. Hark.
It's time for the news. And tickets are on sale now for Miracle City through Ticketek.com, and the show runs from February the 7th. I think I got those dates mixed up slightly earlier on, but the tickets are on sale now, and I'll put a link up on our Facebook page.
Stage art, 2018 season, Falsettos, Bear and Nine. To book a subscription, visit their website, Stage Art Season 2018.
Yeah, there's a link on the Facebook page.
Nine.
No, did you see Eight and a Half? Did you see the film?
I did, but do you know, it was so long ago.
Next week I'm going to read a poem I wrote after seeing it in 1973, because it's quite interesting. Anyway, Kim Barter has an exhibition open at the Metropolitan Gallery in Geelong called The Kimberley. Did you just say that, John?
No, I mentioned it to you a little bit earlier and suggested that if we're going to go to Geelong...
Pay attention, Mark.
I am.
Well, we were talking off air and we were saying that we should actually go over to Geelong and visit the Archibald at the art gallery there. And I said, let's go see this show too.
Okay, good. Yep. So that's on the 18th of November until the 3rd of December.
Yep.
That follows a recent trip where she immersed herself in the landscape of the region, making many fast sketch drawings, searching for an original response to her feelings and thoughts as a reminder to herself and to others of the beauty of our landscape heritage. God almighty.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to read all that. No. But I'm actually going to try and have a chat with her if we can next week. They're beautiful works, and we'll go and see them.
Okay.
The Peninsula Artist Trail finishes at the end of today after the last two weekends. It's been open studios. You've got a few hours left to catch up. If you are keen to go and see somebody, go and do it now or after this show.
The annual postcard show is on at Linden New Art at Domain House in the Botanic Gardens until mid-January. There's 1,007 of them, Mark.
17, I think.
Yeah. If you want to spend 7 seconds each, it's a couple of hours.
Yes, indeed.
Alan Petland, who was on last week, is a lovely man and quite a good poet. He's guest artist at Poe's Corner on tonight at the BBC Cafe in Macrae. If you want to join, it starts at 6 p.m.
Yes.
And we should be there.
Yes, that's right. We're going to go along. The Ninch Festival is back this year at St Andrew's Beach, the recreational club there on the 13th of January. Tickets are on sale already, and there's already a link on our Facebook page.
Strong Ties, Weavings from Bulabula will be back at Bright Space in St Kilda on December the 14th. I don't know what they mean by back.
Because they've been in there before on previous years. So this is a set they're returning.
Mm. Okay.
No, they didn't sell them all. They just got to try and set them up again.
They've made some new ones.
An exhibition of Hal Hatem's work is on at Eastgate Gallery in Burwood Road, Hawthorne, until December the 13th. Mm. There is a link up there too, and he was the man who brought John into the world.
Yes, he is.
Well, with his mum.
Yeah, we did need John's mum. If you have just tuned in, you've missed Arts About. We'd love to hear from you, so you can visit our Facebook page and you'll find links to some of the things we've been talking about on the show and also get a reminder about what's coming up in the next show, and you can leave us a message. You'll find a link to that Facebook page on the RPP website, so join us again 11 a.m. next Sunday or hear the repeat on Wednesdays at 12, or you can listen to the podcasts on the station website whenever you feel like it. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
You know what you like, don't you, Mark?
Mostly.
Mostly. Yeah, you know what you don't like. It's easier to know what you don't
like. It is, definitely.
No, I think it's equal. You just have to be passionate. People are afraid to say what they don't like.